fair and reasonable and do not do violence to the institution of marriage. Extensive Mormon support for California's ballot measure banning gay marriage made the faith a target of gay rights groups. Gay rights activists and Mormon leaders met in secret in the days preceding the Salt Lake City vote. They agreed to language exempting religious groups from some elements of the ordinances. Now attention turns to the Utah legislature, where the vast majority of lawmakers are Mormon. Howard Berkus, NPR News, Salt Lake City.
The remnants of Hurricane Ida are heading up the East Coast. The storm has brought heavy rain to southern states. The National Weather Service has issued flood watches and warnings for most of North Carolina, where meteorologists expect rainfall amounts of up to 5 inches by tomorrow morning. In Georgia, heavy rain has caused several creeks in the Atlanta area to flood. I'm Giles Snyder. This is NPR News from Washington.
Support for NPR comes from the Wallace Foundation, a source of ideas for expanding learning opportunities beyond the school day at wallacefoundation.org.
News from NPR is made possible by a grant from Champaign-Danville Overhead Doors, offering pinch-proof doors, keyless digital entries, and lifetime manufacturer's warranties. Champaign-Danville Overhead Doors, serving businesses and families with professionally installed doors and automatic openers since 1959 in Ogden, Illinois.
Hi, I'm Kevin Kelly. Lucinda Lawrence is band's librarian at the University of Illinois, and Robert Picklesheimer is founder of Creative Dramatics Workshop in Sydney. The two are collaborating to create a new musical theater work called 1787, We the People. I'll talk with Bob and Lucinda about the project on the Wednesday edition of Live and Local. The show airs weekdays from noon to 1 on FM 90.9.
Good morning. Welcome to hour number two of Focus 580. This is our morning talk program. My name's David Inge. Glad to have you with us. The producers for the show, Harriet Williamson, Martha Deal, Henry Frain is at the controls this morning. We certainly love our electronic gadgets, and people who make them know that. And they continue to offer us new and improved versions, things that perform better, things that have new features and functions. And as a result, we end up throwing away a lot of things like cell phones and computers and televisions, and some of these actually still work. Only a small percentage of those are recycled, and that's a serious issue. This morning, we'll be talking about the problem of e-waste and maybe also the potential for changing the way that electronic devices are designed and produced, certainly changing what we do with them when we believe that they're at the end of their useful life. And we have three guests with us here in the studio. Willie Cade is the founder of PC Rebuilders and Recyclers. It's based in Chicago. And his idea there when he put this together was to reuse and recycle e-waste and make the product a usable product available to schools, to nonprofits, to people who otherwise couldn't afford to have a computer. He's here visiting the campus, and we'll be talking about e-waste and some of his experiences this afternoon at 4 o'clock in the Illinois Ballroom at the iHotel and Conference Center. That's on South First in Champaign. And anybody who is interested in hearing what he has to say should feel welcome to come on down. We have also two other guests here in the studio with us from the University of Illinois. Tim Lindsay is the Associate Director of the Illinois Sustainable Technology Center's Technical Assistance Program. He has a staff there of 15 engineers and scientists that do research and think about innovative technologies that improve sustainability. Also here is William Bullock. He is Professor of Industrial Design. He is Director of the Product Interaction Research Lab and the Design for Energy and Environment Laboratory here at the U of I. He, among other things, was involved in a very successful electronic waste design competition that involved students here at the University of Illinois. And we'll talk with them about this subject, and questions are certainly welcome, as always. We just ask people to keep their questions brief as they can, stay on the topic, otherwise your call's welcome. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Thanks to all of you very much for being here.
Thanks for having us.
We appreciate it. As a way of starting, and I don't know who would be best to address the question, but just let me ask a very general question about e-waste. And again, what we're talking about is things like old cell phones, televisions, computers, those sorts of things. What sort of volume are we talking about?
We're in the United States. We're talking about a 1 billion pounds a year. Right now, we own about 1 billion electronic devices as Americans. And about 1 billion pounds of those are thrown away in some form. And so what we're trying to do is we're trying to capture those and see how we can either reuse them or properly dispose of them, get the materials out of it.
And the for the things that aren't recycled, does most of this end up in the landfill and in a conventional landfill?
Yes. EPA estimates that 82% of the equipment that we no longer use, that we're not storing or not using, actually does end up in a landfill. I think that's a little bit high, but it's ballpark number.
Yeah. And that is a problem because?
The issue is in the electronics, there's a lot of materials that are used, heavy metals, et cetera, and we just don't want them in our landfills.
Okay.
It's just not good material to have there, number one. Number two is we could use them in other ways. And then three is if we can't reuse them, we want to put it back into the system so that we can make new product out of it. And that's really, I think, the important thing that we need to do. It. If we start to close that loop, then we're not pulling virgin material from the ground. And virgin material is environmentally much more impactful than taking and reusing our materials. Mm.
Did you want to add something onto that, Tim?
Well, I think the e-waste problem is a good example of a system that is out of balance. And in our work at the Illinois Sustainable Technology Center, we work with all types of industrial sectors to try to get their systems into balance. And anytime you end up with a large waste stream going to landfills that's full of goods or products that still have high-value components, you have a system that's out of balance. And so one of the reasons we got involved in this area is to try to rework the existing system of producing and using and managing the waste associated with electronic goods such that it's a lot less wasteful. And as we reduce wastefulness, we improve the sustainability of the system.
Yeah. I'm sure that yet the University of Illinois – because of the kind of work that we do here, we have lots of laboratories, and I don't know how many computers there are in this campus, but I'm sure that there are plenty of them. This is a serious issue for this university and for other universities. What is the University of Illinois? How are we as a university approaching this?
We follow the regulations that have been set up by state law and have been in place for many, many years. And it is effective to a degree, but we did a study last year in a class in which we investigated this particular problem and feel that there are probably some better ways of not having the material wind up in unused condition. They do recycle a fair amount of the stuff on campus here that departments can pick through, you know, used equipment, and there are facilities set up for that. But it's somewhat of an out-of-whack system. It's not as effective as it should be, and probably too much of the material does wind up being unused, especially if things are out of date and their life is not extended on those products. They wind up being ground up and turned back into sand, essentially, I think, as Willie has mentioned earlier.
Yeah. Well, that I guess that does get at this question, because we do know that the technology changes very fast, and so people are – they're expecting increased performance. And so then how of the – Let's say we're just going to talk about computers. Of those computers that people get rid of because it's not fast enough anymore, it doesn't have enough memory, or it won't do what they want, how many of those can be truly useful to somebody, and how many, you know, are there some that you would say truly are so old that they're not worth trying to refurbish so someone can reuse them? And then maybe there what you're talking about, well, they've got to be disposed of in a responsible way. I mean, how much stuff really can be reused?
Right. Well, I mean, it's a fabulous question that you're asking. The issue really is you and I and the way we interact with the computer, our expectations. Now, I'm more than happy to take a Pentium 3 computer, which is considered, you know, antique in today's world, and certainly not one that you would see on your desk, but I can transform it into another device. Let's call it, let's take this Pentium 3 and make it a home energy display device so that when you get the smart grid in your home, you now have the data and a system that makes that data available to you so you can start doing smart things with your energy in your home. And one of the things that we've found, studies have found is that if you have a home energy display device, you reduce your energy consumption by 30%.
Because you see how much energy you're using and on what.
On what and see how you're doing it and those kinds of things. And so it becomes very, very easy to start to use this equipment. So we need to stop thinking about this particular use for this computer because these are smart devices. These are things that are can do many, many things with them. We've created a product that actually now we take old hard drives and destroy the data with it. But we use old machines with it because it doesn't matter how fast the machine is. So I think it's kind of ironic that we're actually taking old computers to destroy the data so that it cleans up its own mess in one sense. Right now, data is growing at a – data storage availability is growing at a 60% per year capacity. I have one of the old hard drives from an IBM System 36. It's a 10-meg hard drive. It weighs 71 pounds.
10 megs. That's astounding.
10 megs, 71 pounds, and it is the size of a large suitcase. And then you take a look at what we have now, you know, a terabyte that's maybe 2 pounds or terabyte and a half. So it's astounding. But we need to get smart about what we're doing with the electronics, not so much what we're thinking about it. And that's really what brings us to the university, and that's what brings us to the Sustainable Electronics Initiative that we're working on. And in February, we are going to have a symposium down here, and we are literally going to be bringing in the world's experts on this whole issue. One of the things that when you start talking about in the real details on it, one of the things that you discover pretty quickly is that it's a small community. And it's such a big problem, we need to make it a much bigger. So we're very excited about the possibilities of what this is going to bring to the university particularly, but also to the United States. And just kind of one other thing that I want to leapfrog off of on this is if what we start to do is we start to remanufacture or make new products with this stuff, it's a way that we can start to bring home back to the United States the electronics industry rather than shipping it off. Because right now, if you buy a refurbished computer or some other, you know, remade product, it's made in the U.S. If you buy new, it's shipping a job overseas.
And can you make money doing this?
We do. And it's a very nice livelihood. Thank you.
Anything else you guys would want to add at this point?
Well, I think one of the keys to the Sustainable Electronics Initiative that Willie mentioned is that we're not just taking the waste after it's been created and try to find something useful to do with it. I mean, that will be one of the elements. But this initiative will be much more proactive than that. We will look at designing devices such that they can be remanufactured and reused, and such that components can be removed and replaced if they're faulty, such that viable raw materials can be more easily extracted instead of taking to some third world country and have the insulation burned off the wire or something like that. We will take into account the entire life cycle of the devices from the time that they're manufactured, or actually in the beginning from the design phase through the manufacture through the use phase and through the remanufacturing and ultimate disposal phase. So we'll look at the entire life cycle proactively. We'll look at the way the processes manufacture the materials such that that's done more efficiently, better techniques for managing the waste that we do end up with, systems for remanufacturing, systems for handling the materials, collecting the materials, storing them, distributing them, inventorying them, so that we can get the right components to the right places for remanufacturing. Development of materials that not only are effective for use in the devices, but also for not as objectionable to the environment. So we're looking at greener materials, and then policies that promote the better system all the way around. Yeah. So that's what we're after.
I have a couple of callers here, and we'll get to them. Maybe I'll just ask Professor Bullock just real quick. How much does this require a significant change in the way people have approached design for some kind of these things? Does it really mean doing different design differently?
Oh, certainly. It means being informed about what decisions you have to make that are going to impact the usability. That starts with the materials, specifications for the particular design. It involves understanding the systems that are going to be used to manufacture the product. As Tim mentioned earlier, examining the entire life cycle in the design, the design process, right, in that context, right, not simply looking at making the product look better or design to function better in certain aspects, but it's really looking at the total picture, and that requires a new paradigm, a new way of looking at design that jumps and starts. Some companies are doing that or beginning to do that now. But we need much more definitive research to inform that design process, and that's the value of the Strategic Electronics Initiative, Sustainable Electronics Initiative, is being very strategic about how to examine that problem in the context of design, and that should inform the design process. I might mention that we also, as a part of that, as a new laboratory that I'm heading up as part of that initiative, Design for Energy and Environment, in which we will take some of the best and brightest students and researchers here at the university and pit them against those particular problems and doing studies to help lead industry and partner with industry in leading this initiative.
Let me introduce again our guests. The last person you heard speak, that's William Bullock. He's professor of industrial design, and he's also a director of the Product Interaction Research Laboratory and the Design for Energy and Environment Laboratory at the University of Illinois here in Urbana-Champaign. Also, here's Tom Lindsay. He's associate director of the Illinois Sustainable Technology Center's Technical Assistance Program. And Willie Cade, he's the founder of PC Rebuilders and Recyclers. He started that in 2000 to reuse and recycle e-waste. And since then, he has provided more than 40,000 refurbished PCs to schools and to nonprofits and to kids who otherwise wouldn't have been able to afford them. And he's here visiting the campus to talk about some of his experiences and the general issue of e-waste. And he'll be talking this afternoon at 4 Illinois Ballroom at the I Hotel and Conference Center on South First in Champaign. Anybody who's interested should stop by. Questions welcome. We have several. We'll start out with someone in Geneva, line 4, the toll-free line. Hello.
Yeah, good morning. You know what? This is interesting. I just left a guy's house that he wants. His father-in-law is ill, so they what it came down to, he's got junk in his house, just stuff scattered about. Old electronics, TVs, whatnot, appliances. He says, just get rid of it. I don't care how you do it, just get rid of it. And I have a problem with that, and I told him, I said, look, it's because where I'm at, there is no landfill anymore. So now we're faced with the fact of having to recycle this stuff. And I told him, of course, he doesn't want to spend any money. And a lot of people, I go through this all the time because I get rid of stuff. They're lazy. They don't want to recycle this stuff. There's computers in here. I mean, it's like you were talking about. I'm a contractor, and by my standards, I've been trying to be green for years. And when I mean green, I mean getting rid of things, recycling things. It's a little bit more of an effort. Or I shouldn't say a lot more of an effort, but nobody wants to do it. It's the laziness. So they call these junk guys out. They only pay them a couple hundred dollars, and boom, guess where it goes? It goes in the landfill. So it's the awareness that you guys have a great thing going there. You've got to plug it. I wish you guys were up in this neck of the woods and you could set up something here and make people more aware of this. I mean, we're supposed to be an environmentally sound country, and it to me, when I see this going on a daily basis, it just fathoms the heck out of me. And saying we're hypocrites, don't you think?
I think the caller makes a really good point here that even people who want to do the right thing, maybe they don't know how. I mean, suppose you have an old computer and you say, okay, I want to dispose of this responsibly. Well, what do I do with it?
Well, fortunately, in the state of Illinois, starting January 1st, the people who make the computer equipment are now going to be responsible for collecting it. So it's called extended producer responsibility. So since Dell made that computer, they are now obligated to collect, and it's on the order of 3 million pounds worth of this stuff. And so very shortly, we're going to be having events all over the state. And you can go to a website called ewastecalendar.com, and that will give you the time and place where you can come and get drop off your electronics. It's called covered electronics devices, or eligible electronic devices. And so we're really going to be addressing that issue in the state of Illinois. We've been building up to it. Legislation passed about 12 months ago. So I'm actually very excited about that coming in. The other thing, though, that the caller needs to be a little bit aware of is if this information, if these electronics have the ability to store information, you want to make sure that that gets destroyed. Mm-hmm. So you don't want it just thrown away. We actually did a study in the city of Chicago where we took for a week any computers that were thrown into the garbage for a quarter of the city. And they go through the garbage truck and they were smushed and, you know, and putrid and all the things you don't want. You don't want those. But we were literally able to pull the hard drives out, spin them up in a system, and we were able to find out the individual that had thrown away that particular hard drive because we could figure out information that he had left on there about himself. Now, we didn't go deep and we didn't, you know, want to search anything. We were just doing it as an exercise to see if a hard drive thrown into the trash, smushed into a garbage truck, gone through the processing center, if it still worked. And the answer is yes. So you really do want to make sure that you're working with people who will give you some assurances that your data has been destroyed if you don't know how to do it yourself. Lots of people obviously on campus probably could figure that out. That's not hard. But if you're not, A, wanting to do it or you're not doing it on a regular basis, et cetera, there are ways to actually do that. And that's part of, you know, what our business and our service is.
Yeah. There have been special events, drop-off events. We've had them here, and I'm sure a lot of other communities have had them, where they said, okay, you have an old television, cell phones, computers, whatever. Come on down. We will take them and deal with them. I think that that's great. It may mean that you got to hold on to stuff until one of these rolls around, but I guess people can do that. I think some people would say what really, though, makes the most sense is that the people who sell the stuff should take it back so that you should know, you know, wherever, if you bought it at Best Buy, that when you're done with it, you can take it back to, you know, or I don't mean to pick on that, you know, whoever. And that's the best way to close that loop.
Well, in fact, that's true. As a matter of fact, it's specifically true with Best Buy. You can take any electronics back to Best Buy, and they will accept it, and they will take it and put it through the process and do it properly. And as a matter of fact, one of the sponsors of the ewastecalendar.com is Best Buy, and so that's exactly what, and that's what's happening with this legislation. The whole issue had been is cost. And so, you know, we do it in Illinois with tires by when you buy a tire, you pay a fee to get rid of them. So that's called an advanced recovery process. We've decided through the legislation to do an extended producer responsibility. And the reason we really went with that decision and 19 out of the 20 states who have these laws have gone to this extended producer responsibility. The reason that they've gone with that is because they really want to put pressure back on the manufacturers to design better product. Kind of back to William's point. And so this whole notion, and it's grown up in the last 3 years. There's very little research that's been done on it. I mean, one of the things that so excites me about being here at the university is it's great depth and strength in this field of engineering that we really need to be thinking about and working on it in a much more aggressive way. And so one of the things that we're doing, yes, there's going to be a lecture tonight, and I think that'll be fun. I promise I'll actually be entertaining. And may even provide some nourishment during the event that people will be pleased with, but also tomorrow we're going to be working at the Illinois Sustainable Technology Center with faculty and staff who are interested in this subject, and really laying out what are the arenas, what are the areas of research and study that are possible, because there's going to be some significant research funding available in a short amount of time through the US EPA on this particular subject. So it's a very exciting place, and we can use all kinds of skills to be applied on this.
Yeah. Let's talk with some other folks. Villa, maybe I kept that caller waiting too long. My apologies. We'll go to Rabana right here, line two. Hello.
Hi.
Yeah.
So I have a question that isn't so much about engineering or design per se as marketing. How do issues like, from a manufacturer's perspective, obviously, they're interested in selling product and continuing to sell electronic products. And so you have these factors like planned obsolescence, the constant desire to release new product each year, so you have to buy new things. They design products to be incompatible with each other. There's proprietary cables and interfaces and connections. Non-integrated products, so you have to buy a GPS, and then you have to buy a phone, and then you have to buy other kinds of things. And it seems like there's all kinds of marketing forces and basically just competitive forces that result in pressing down the gas pedal further in terms of more materials, more products, constantly trying to get new products out there. How do you interact with or counteract that when you're trying to look at this life cycle holistic perspective?
By the way, that's a great question. But one of the things that you'll see going forward is those companies that start to address those issues where they're increasing the length of time that a particular product is used, or it's more integratable in future products, et cetera, you will see those companies starting to outcompete their competitors, so that the classic example, quite frankly, is Apple versus PC. Some people would suggest that the reason PC has done better in the marketplace is because there's interoperability, whereas Apple tried to control the whole market. Now, a lot of people will argue that Apple's just a better computer, and I wouldn't disagree with that, though I am a PC guy. But the ability for people to interact across together on those and really to leverage one another is really, really important. And that's really what I think what the caller was talking about, is how do we make this stuff better? I think the issue in terms of marketing is we're going to get away from the notion of new is better. We're going to get away from that. We're going to get away from that pretty quickly, pretty radically. One of the things that's interesting about Windows 7 introduction is I can run Windows 7 on a Pentium 3 system, which is a notion that people have not had before, a new operating system that is, in essence, you can retrofit. And you start to think about Windows 7 and operating it on the probably half a billion computers that are in storage. That's my own personal estimate, by the way, because I know all of you listeners out there who are listening to this, you've got one in the closet somewhere. If it's not in your apartment, it's in your parents' home or something like that. But we've all got them. And we're storing them for some vague reasons, like I'm a little bit worried about the security, or, gee, I paid $1,000 for it when I originally bought it, so it's got to be worth something. And so it just sits there. So we're going to start to use that, and we're going to have options going forward that we just haven't had before. And it's actually going to be very exciting. Again, kind of back to that, what I mentioned early in the hour about the home energy display device. Oh, I'm going to be able to use this in another way. Oh, that'll be fun.
And I agree. I think what we're after is a new industrial revolution, and that's going to be brought about by the public. And what I mean there is marketers are going to do what they have to do to try to make profit for the company. But those companies that get seriously behind the green revolution and the public who support, you know, those companies and those products that are greener, that are that don't prematurely are not planned obsolescence prone, that do have extended life, extended possibilities, and those options are beginning to surface now. Once that happens, and once the parade starts, you can bet that any politician worth his or her salt is going to be wanting to lead that parade. So to me, that's where it's going to happen is with the public, and hopefully through the research initiatives here at the university, we can help provide companies with the correct information to help bring about those better options for consumers.
I think there's no question that the existing delivery mechanisms for electronic devices are just consumptive in nature. The way you get the performance of a cellular telephone or a computer is by purchasing it. And in reality, that's not what the consumer needs. The consumer needs the performance of a cellular telephone. They need to be able to communicate. They don't really need to buy a computer. They need the performance of the computer. And we're seeing in other sectors alternative business models that are based on performance as opposed to buying goods. For instance, Interface Carpet has a program whereby instead of purchasing carpet, you pay them to have your floors covered. And that completely changes the dynamic of that business such that a lot less carpet is sold because the consumers don't need carpet. They need their floors covered.
And you're really providing the service as opposed
you're providing performance.
Mm-hmm.
And with, for instance, Carrier is another example of that. They have a program where you pay for comfort instead of buying an air conditioner. And it completely changes the dynamics. They're a lot less consumptive. Automotive companies now don't purchase any chemicals in the manufacture of an automobile. They don't purchase paints. They don't purchase cleaning chemicals, anything like that. They pay for the performance of those chemicals, and someone else does the supplying. And when you make those types of changes in the delivery mechanisms, then you tend to become a lot less wasteful. Because people are just paying for the performance as opposed to buying more stuff.
And what's really important here to understand about this is in order to make that transition, we need lots of information that we don't currently have. We need to have understanding. We need to bring the rigor of a university to these questions. And today's students and graduate students and faculty and staff, they really are the vanguard, the forefront of this whole conversation. And the fun part about it, too, is there's a real willingness, which is wonderful.
Thanks very much.
All right. We have three guests here with us in the studio. Let me introduce them again. Willie Cade is the founder of PC Rebuilders and Recyclers in Chicago. It's a firm that he started to reuse and recycle e-waste. He has, over the last 9 or so years, refurbished, delivered more than 40,000 PCs to schools and to nonprofits and to the homes of at-risk kids. He's here visiting the campus to talk about some of his experiences and the problem of e-waste. Also in studio with us is Tim Lindsay. He's the Associate Director of the Illinois Sustainable Technology Center's Technical Assistance Program, and William Bullock. He's Professor of Industrial Design. He is also Director of the Product Interaction Research Lab and the Design for Energy and Environment Lab here at the U of I. Questions are welcome, 333-9455 and toll-free 800-222-9455. I just wondered if, Tim Lindsay, you just for I got some callers here, so I promise I don't want to make these people wait, but I didn't know if you might like to just to talk a little bit about, more about the Illinois Sustainable Technology Center and what it's all about.
Right. We are a unit of the university's Institute of Natural Resource Sustainability. That institute was created about 15 months ago as a new institute within the university. We came over from being a state agency. We were housed in the Illinois Department of Natural Resources. We came over in July of 2008, along with the State Water Survey, the State Geological Survey, and the Natural History Survey. And our mission at the Illinois Sustainable Technology Center is to make the state more sustainable. We believe that the key to sustainability is to just simply become less wasteful. As we become less wasteful with the processes we use and the products that we make, society becomes more sustainable, and that benefits the environment, it benefits the economy, and it benefits society as a whole. So that is our basic mission and approach to the sustainability problem.
Okay. Well, let's talk with some more folks here. Let's talk with someone in Urbana in line one. Hello.
Hi. Just kind of a facetious question, but is there any hope for my Mac 2, $5,000 with 5 megabytes, about 5 years old.
Caller, thank you for your question. The only hope is material recovery. But the good hope on that one is when Apple was making those computers, they were using a lot of gold. So it's probably worth about $10 worth of materials. And so the next time there is a collection event, or if we open up a permanent center here in the area, then you can make sure to drop it off. My guess were you still using floppy drives there? So my guess is your data is probably not an issue.
Right. Thank you.
One thing I wanted to mention is next semester, Willie and I are teaching a class on sustainable e-waste, in which we will organize a collection event for the surrounding community here in Champaign-Urbana. We will make the materials that we collect, the e-waste that we collect, available to teams of students in the class to let them take a whack at seeing if they can extend the life of this equipment. Now, much of this stuff may not actually work, but some does, and it's a chance to demonstrate how we might make use or extend the life of existing products. So I would encourage, if you have that device and want to hang on to it, we'll be advertising that sometime in February. And we're happy to have you come by and drop off that material. We'll wipe the hard drives to ensure confidentiality of data. And at the end of the line, it can make some student teams happy to have some material to work with to illustrate and bring attention to this growing problem.
Oh, and let me just disagree with my good friend Bill for a moment there.
Yeah.
He said that much of it doesn't work. That's not true. Most of it actually does work. It's just not in working order at the time. So we want to be real careful about this, because I've been in this business for about 15 years, and I have only ever once seen a integrated circuit chip that actually broke, that actually exploded. Rest of the time, they are always in intact condition. It's just we have to be smart enough, we have to be capable enough to figure out how to use this stuff. And that's the real challenges. And that's what I love working with Bill and the students on, are those issues. Is, okay, great, we've got this great resource. What are we going to do with it?
Now, one of the advantages of partnering engineering and the techno files and others that are very knowledgeable on the technical end of things with industrial designers and artists and others who work on the user interface issues of this is to demonstrate what's possible. What I was mentioning there is that some of the actual designs will plug and play and actually work, and some may not. But they'll be valuable to the student teams to illustrate what might be done with the problem.
Okay, good. Well, we should make sure to in some form, to be talking about this next year so we can help you get the word out that this thing is happening. So
we appreciate that.
Well, we should definitely do that. Let's talk with someone in Savoy. Next, line two. Hello.
Oh, whatever happened to Renaissance Computer?
Renaissance Computer, for listeners who are not sure, was a place where you could take and sell your old equipment. And then it was a retail store and it was a franchise. And you could then go in and buy used equipment. I think it was the proverbial head of its time conversation. The other issue that they ran into, quite frankly, which is one that I deal with day in and day out, is there's so much variety of equipment that comes in that it's very complex to reimage these systems. And Microsoft is now only really starting to let open up the licensing for the reuse arena. And we were designated the first Microsoft-authorized refurbisher in the United States back in 2000. And we're now progressing actually very nicely with them. And so Microsoft is now understand that reuse is the way that they're going to find their next 1 to 5 billion customers. They've got a billion right now, which is a nice number. But they're looking for the next 1 to 5 billion. They're very clear that they're not going to get it by selling new boxes, that it's going to have to come from reuse. And so they've opened up their licensing, and they work very closely with us, and we work very closely with them on all of the issues that it's going to take to do that. And it gets technical, but that's part of why we're down here at the university, because we want that kind of expertise brought here. Yeah. One of the interesting facts about this university that, quite frankly, I love to brag about to my friends is that there are more graduates working at Microsoft from the University of Illinois than any other university on the planet.
Really?
Yeah.
Is that true?
And that's a fact that was brought to us when Bill Gates was visited here.
Yeah.
So this is a very, very rich center. And we're really looking forward to it. One of the things that William didn't mention about the contest last year, we got to give away $15,000 worth of prize money. This year, we're going to have another contest. It's going to be international in scope. And quite frankly, it is our hope that many of the winners will be from this campus and that we will have significantly more money to award. So,
in the form of scholarships, right, Willie? Not just cash.
Tuition scholarships.
Yeah. Tuition scholarships. Yeah. It was great. By the way, I actually saw one of those checks that came to the students. I was actually very thrilled to see that. So it was a really nice kind of completion and cycle in this process is how you can have some very practical learning and those. So it's very fun.
Yeah. So maybe in the interest of full disclosure, we should say you indeed have two children who attend the University of Illinois.
I do. I do. And much of my money comes here, too.
All right. We have about 10 minutes left. If folks have questions, they can call us 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Our guests are Willie Cade, founder of PC Rebuilders and Recyclers, Tim Lindsay, he's the associate director of the Illinois Sustainable Technology Center's Technical Assistance Program, and William Bullock, he's professor of industrial design here at the University of Illinois. Just for maybe at least a moment or two, I expect maybe people might be interested in hearing at least a little bit of the story of how it is you came to start PC Rebuilders and Recyclers.
Oh, it's a fun story. I am dyslexic. I was diagnosed with dyslexia as a senior in college. That just goes to show how old I am. So one of the things that I've always needed as a helper, as a support, is computing capability, especially with word processing, et cetera. And when I was in Chicago, this is about 17 years ago now, I was on the board of directors of an organization that provided private education to African-American youth in the south and west sides of the city. And I was sitting in this meeting and I said that in order for these kids to be competitive when they got to college, they needed a computer in their home. Across the table from me at that time was the CFO for Waste Management. And he said, well, that's funny. We have about 100 PCs we don't know how to throw away. And I thought, gee, that's really interesting. Waste Management doesn't know how to throw something away. Yeah. And so we literally went to their headquarters in Oak Brook. And there were four conference rooms full of equipment that had been stacked in there waiting to be disposed of because they didn't know what to do with them. So we took them. It was about 100 PCs. We thought we were in heaven, by the way. And some were original IBM PCs. I mean, the original IBM PC, you know, with floppy drives and all of those kinds of things. And we took them and we thought, oh, we were in heaven. But we quickly found out that the difficult part about dealing with all of this is reinstalling an operating system. It's not trivial. It's not just putting in a disk and it all works. There's some real art to it, and that's what we've been developing over the last 15 years with PC Rebuilders and Recyclers, really that expertise that's required to reinstall an operating system. We call it refurbishment. So we started to do it. It took us 7 years of negotiation with Microsoft to end up with a deal that would allow us to legally do the licensing on the software for the operating system. And we've been doing it, and so we were able to get going on this. I mean, it's really kind of an interesting where it's kind of led. I mean, for example, I'm the co-chair of the standards group for the United Nations on this issue. And we meet annually in Geneva, Switzerland, and talk about it and work out the details of what's it going to take that we can internationally solve this problem, because electronics are international. And what we want to do is stop, at least in my mind, I want to stop the production being localized into one or two countries, but actually production of computers being worldwide. So I want a truly global market for electronics, not just a build it one place and ship it everywhere else. And obviously that will be much more sustainable.
Yeah. Well, and so certainly one of the things that we have been hearing more and more about the problem of e-waste and ending up being dumped in developing countries.
Yeah, the big issue with development is shipment overseas is that when it gets into the hands of people who informally try to recover the materials, they tend to do it in antiquated and environmentally bad ways. So, you know, the pictures that that Tim alluded to earlier of people taking copper wire and burning off the insulation in order to get pure copper, that creates all kinds of problems in terms of the chemicals that are generated in the actual burning process. So there are lots better ways to do it, and there are lots of really good ways to do it in countries like China. Because China does some bad things, doesn't mean that it's all bad.
We are coming down the point here. We have maybe about 5 minutes. Questions still welcome. Someone wants to get in here real quick. 333-WILL or 9455. Toll free 800-222-9455. I guess I'd find myself ultimately here also coming back to the consumer and the role the consumer plays. And a couple of things. I mean, first of all, your argument that wanting to be green will become an increasing motivator for people, so that then if you're a manufacturer of electronic equipment and if you can make the pitch that you are green, a lot of people are going to say, okay, I would rather give the money to this person who I think is operating green than somebody else that I'm not sure or I don't know. But I guess it also comes down to the question of, are people actually willing to pay the true cost of the stuff that they buy? And I suppose, you know, some people also, they always argue, you're going to pay either now or you're going to pay later.
Now, David, but you're making an assumption here, and I'm going to interrupt you.
Yes.
Is your assumption is that green is more costly. And it's not. What people find is when they do the work to be green, they actually find it saves them money. So, and there's an initiative within the electronics industry right now called EPEAT, E-P-E-A-T, which actually rates how green computers are. And you would think that the manufacturers would be fighting this tooth and nail. They aren't. They're actually actively engaged because they understand if they start thinking about this, they start working with it, they will actually become more profitable in this process. One of the things that's really interesting about this EPEAT process, it started about 2 years ago as some wackos out in Portland, Oregon. And they're good friends, so I can call them that. And they just thought that this would be kind of a nice idea. We could rate some products, and then people would know, you know, whether this is a green product or not. Mm-hmm. It's now taken on worldwide interest, and the federal government is now going to be requiring any equipment that is bought to be EPEAT certified. In other words, to prove how green it is. And since they buy about 10% of the world's electronics, the industry has taken notice. And it has become wildly successful. So I just want to disabuse you and any of the listeners here of the notion that it's costly to do this. Please don't think that. Actually, it's less costly to do that. And so we're going to have some real fun doing that. We just got to be smart about it. Yeah. And being smart about things is what a university is all about.
Yeah, I just want to reinforce that point on being green, being more expensive, because really the key to being green or being more sustainable is being less wasteful. And being less wasteful is generally good for business, unless you happen to be in the business of being wasteful.
Yeah. So more efficient.
Right. And one of the problems right now is the market is being driven by people who benefit from being wasteful. And we need to change those dynamics.
Yeah. We are just about the point we have to finish. I think we have one more call. Well, maybe I'll try real quick. We'll go her Urbana here, line one. If you can be quick, go ahead.
Hi. I just wanted to ask if there's anything that can be done about all the power that's consumed by electronics on standby. You know, some things have to be on standby. Your video recorder isn't going to record if it isn't able to keep track of the time and, you know, what's coming through on the channel feed, but some things like my microwave oven does not need to have a clock, you know,
That's a good question because it has to do with our energy usage. I don't know if that's something quickly you can say something about.
It's a great question, and all I can do is agree with the caller and say that indeed one of the things that's fascinating about as we start to implement smart grid here in Illinois, one of the things that we're starting to see is that fully 20% of our energy usage is an issue of standby power. And one of the things that we're going to start to learn about our use of electricity when we get smart grid and when we start paying for electricity on a real-time basis is what we can and what we should be doing with it. And we're going to need the intelligence in order to do that.
Okay, we're going to stop there. I want to go around the table here one more time and thank our guests, William Bullock. He's professor of industrial design at the U of I. Tim Lindsay, he is associate director of the Illinois Sustainable Technology Center's Technical Assistance Program. And Willie Cade, he's the founder of PC Rebuilders and Recyclers. If you'd like to hear more from him, he'll be speaking this afternoon at 4 o'clock in the Illinois Ballroom at the I Hotel and Conference Center on South First in Champaign. Anybody who is interested in attending should stop by. Thank you all very much.
Thank you, Dave.
Support for today's broadcast comes from Natural Gourmet. Natural Gourmet is a natural food store specializing in vitamin supplements, homeopathic remedies, and organic foods. Located at the Shops of Knollwood, their restaurant features Thai-influenced foods for eat-in or carry-out.
We're broadcasting from Campbell Hall for Public Telecommunication, thanks to the generosity of University of Illinois alumni Alice and Robert Campbell. And that's it for us here on Focus. Up next, the Afternoon Magazine, the host for the show, Celeste Quinn.
Thank you very much, David. Coming up today in the 1 o'clock hour of the Afternoon Magazine, we're going to talk about the editorial cartoonist Herbert Lawrence Block, better known as Herb Block. He began his career as an editorial cartoonist in 1929. It was a long run spanning 13 American presidencies, concluding in 2001. Our guest this afternoon will be Harry Katz, a former head curator at the Library of Congress and co-author of the new book, Herb Block. Let's take a look now at commodity prices. December wheat in Kansas City, that contract is up 11, trading at 536 and a half. March 551, up 9 and a half. December wheat in Chicago, 534, up 11. March, 554 and a quarter, up 11 and a quarter. December corn, 397, up 2 and a half. March, 412 and a quarter, up 3 and a quarter. May, 420 and three quarters, up 1 3/4. July, 430, up 2 1/2. November beans, 965, up 3 1/2. January, 971 1/2, up 3 1/2. March, 977 1/2, up 3 1/2. May, 977, down 1/2. December meal, 288.60, up 40. December oil, 38.25, up 69. December live cattle, 84.12 1/2, down 47 1/2. February, 85.97 1/2, down 30. November feeder cattle, 93.50, down 37 1/2. January, 93.80, down 92 1/2. December lean hogs, 55.70. That contract is up 7 1/2. December crude, 79.42. Up 37. The U.S. dollar, 7.